Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, hello, hello. It's January 2nd. Wow. 2019. This is a big deal. I'm getting to talk to you on the second day of the year. My subject is going to be love in the new year. And for those of you who think, ugh, please, please, stay on the line. My wonderful audience, another year. It's just really amazing. I just get to think about things I think you might be interested in and that might matter to you. And I know sometimes we go from the darkest stuff, like this mind control, electroshock, federal funding, and mind control and psychosurgery and other kind of dreadful experiments, but not today. Today we start the year talking about love with you, and I want to start out wishing everyone the best year of their lives, no matter how down and out you feel today, or even how much you feel like you've reached the best of the best. There's always room for us human beings to grow out of the doldrums or further along and having a good life. Always room for us to grow. Boy, have I learned that as a father, a husband, a person, a therapist, goodness, a reformer, always room. We humans, we just start out with so much room to grow. We never experience all the growth we can have. So I'm not implying you haven't grown enough, or I'm not implying you don't love enough. I'm just saying I can be talking to myself on this show because, wow, there's limitless more things I could do in becoming a more caring, loving, ethical, honorable human being. We're just born into trouble, you know. We're born with anger built into us, the ability for anger and violence and rage. And irritability and all these things. And then we're built in with love and intimacy and caring and touching and all the good things. And then we're brought up in families where we get a whole mix of all that. And then we grow up in religions and politics and schools where it's a whole mix of good and bad of all that stuff. So there's just always room for us. Always room for us to make our space better. Your experience in the church may have hurt you, in politics it may have hurt you, in the family, in school, in bullying may have hurt you. But there's always that ability to learn more, to grow, to make our space better than ever. And I want to wish all of you that kind of a year. And Jesse and Alex, you know, my wonderful make this show possible people. It's just so great to work with these two wonderful men, and I'm just glad to have you there, if you're there today, handling all the stuff that goes on. And my patients, my clients, if any of you are listening today, I just wish all of you the very, very best. Now, if you've not heard this show before, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on PRNFM, www.prnfm. And it's every Wednesday. It's 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. New York time. And most important, you can call in and talk with me. And what I want to have today is a really good conversation. So this is your chance to enter into a really positive conversation. You can talk about tough things that have happened to you, but we're going to look at the positive, how love can help, how love can help us grow. The call-in number is 888-874-4888. And I don't mind hearing from you if you think that love is a mirage. Call in. Be kind and gentle with my sensitive self and audience. But call in and tell us what your experience is. Tell us about what you hope for in the new year, where you'd like to take the new year. I want this to be a special show where we really help each other grow and grow and grow. Now, remember that Dr. Peter Breggenau has an archive. I'm going to get that in as always. And we have Breggen Live at hotmail.com where you can text, or rather email. Email Breggen Live at hotmail.com. Tell me what you think of this show. I do read the emails. It's interesting that they fell off quite a bit during the New Year, Christmas and New Year. But my website, Breggen.com, God, my website just keeps tooling along. Even during the season, we've always averaging above 2,000 people a day and unique people and many, many more, several times more, 15, 20,000 people, visits from people. So we're just growing even through this season. We're maintaining ourselves, and it's really a blessing. I feel that way about it. And we have daily breaking news. My assistant Ian works hard on that, and Ginger and I contribute to it. Remember that? There's new stuff every day. And then there's the free frequent alert. You want to stay in touch with me? The free, what I'm doing, and to some extent what's going on in the world, these things in the world that I am particularly focused on. So there's a good beginning. And again, let's have some callers early in the show, 888-874-4888. So I went back and I just did a search. And I found something I had written a long, long time ago, and I want to share some of it with you because it's really, really terrific for the beginning of a new year, for January 2nd, 2019. Wow. And the opening of this thing I wrote a number of years back, it starts out so appropriate. Love wipes the slate clean. It reformats our lives. Think of that. Love gives us a whole new set of values. It replaces our grumpiness, our gripes, our negativity, our disappointment, our ungratefulness, our resentfulness, our life isn't worth livingness. Because love essentially is touching that part of yourself that engages lovingly with the world. This is very practical, by the way. You could look at somebody and be angry and mean and hostile. Happens to me. Happens to me. It's likely to happen to me with somebody I'm nearest and dearest to, which is really a disgrace, but that's how we human beings behave. And then you can say to yourself, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I'm going to find my center, my spirit, my soul, my goodness. Whatever I want to call it, my identity, my personality, my true me. And I'm going to engage this person with love, with gladness they're there, with appreciation of their life, with a treasuring of them, with a taking care of attitude. I'm going to do it. And if I don't feel right about it in the beginning, I'm going to attribute that not to I'm being fake, but that the other stuff's fake. Being loving when you feel crappy and angry and mean, that's not real. When you're dealing with somebody you love, or dealing with the world, or the things you believe in, or your creativity, or your ideals, and then you start saying, oh, you know, I give up. They're not worth it. People aren't worth it. You go, that's real, boy. That's getting down to the real stuff. I thought that all the time when I was a young man. I thought if you weren't depressed, you weren't real. Can you imagine that? I bet a lot of you can share that with me. You can call and talk to me about that. When you feel depressed, you're being real and everybody else is being fake. And I meet that in the young boys and girls in my practice. They're just very upfront about it. Teenagers, starting real young, 12, 13, 14. They just think that that being happy is fake. They think that it's the real stuff is the anguish they have, which is almost always generating from some combination, usually of strife in the family, conflict in the family, not necessarily dysfunctional, quote, bad families, just ordinary family life sometimes, and often just not feeling like you're the same person as the rest of the people in the family. Have you ever had that feeling? Do you know the most caring, sensitive people in the world grow up feeling like they don't belong because they don't see it around them, they don't understand it, they don't see it in school? So it's usually home that you're struggling with in your mind when you're thinking these things, or it could be schooling you had, or the abuse in a religious context that you had. But remember, love is beyond the abuse heaped on us, or the misunderstandings, or the conflicts at home, or in religion, or in school, or in politics. I mean, that's not because of love, that's despite love, that's the ruination of love. That's not treasuring and being glad for the lives of other human beings. Somewhere in there is that essence of love, that treasuring, that caring, that joining in with other human beings, with creativity, with nature, with God, with science. God, I've been studying the science of evolution more and more. You know, I wrote my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, which, by the way, ends with the last third of it is about love, about triumph. It's about what Darwin said, believe it or not, which is that the highest human achievements can't be explained by physical evolution, said Darwin. He said the highest human achievements, and then he named, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, or the concept of a loving God, or the concept of mutual aid, which he deeply felt was a part of humanity. He said, that's only partially out of something called the social instincts, which he couldn't exactly identify or describe in detail. He said, but all that leads up to love. Love, that's the ultimate creation. It's just, you can't just take all that wonderful stuff and say that came out of evolution. It came out of the minds of women and men and children too. Love comes out of the creative mind. And if you believe it, not just through evolution, but through some sort of greater than us. When we love, we usually think there's something greater than us. I may not have any idea what, but we feel that. We feel there's something greater going on than us. So love can wipe the slate clean for you in this coming year. It can. It can bring out resources in you you never knew you had. Because if every time you get bitter about something, like, I'm not going to go volunteer there at the animal shelter, or I'm not going to go and try to make my church a better place for people, set up a women's group, set up a men's group, set up a people's group, I'm not going to do that. You know, the minister's no good. If there were a God, life would be better than this. You know, don't go there. Go to, I am a source of love. I'm going to be a source of love. And if Peter Bregan's right, if I become a source of love, I'm going to just feel fuller and richer and happier, more creative, more able to sustain the inevitable ups, downs, pains, and miseries of life. I'm going to really do well. Believe it. Believe it. Love is the center. It's where we go in our thinking, our feelings, and our actions when we're being successful and true to ourselves. Now, what is successful? Yeah, you don't get rich that way. Well, maybe not. I mean, some people have gotten wealthy promoting love in their books, in their sermons, in their philosophy. But I'm not talking about material success, although you will enhance your opportunities for material success if you're kind, gentle, understanding, and loving with the people you work with. Because you, if you're working with more than yourself, which usually requires to have that kind of a wealthy existence, I mean, me working with other people, believe me, you'll get so much more support if you're loving and kind and thoughtful, empathic, putting yourself in the shoes of the people you work with. That's true. Now, can you cheat your way? Sure. So what? Do nasty people get to the top? Yeah. Are some of the countries of the world ruled by people who got there through hate and murder and violence? Sure. Sure. But you can create a different space around you. That is so key. You can build a world around you that is truly, truly good and satisfying. And it's well known that becoming rich and successful is likely to lead as much to drugs as to love, as much as to suicide as to success. You know, having a lot of material success, getting a lot of appreciation from people who don't even really know you, you know, fans and so on, that does not bring happiness. I can tell you that with certainty. After 82 years on this earth, with certainty. Happiness comes from having loving relationships. For some of us, like me, it's just a few. It's not a lot of people. I really love a pretty small number of folks. I don't have great social needs to, and that's because of my childhood, and I'm not going to trouble you with that right now. No, I'm not going to get into that. But I can tell you we vary hugely. My mother-in-law, Jean, she has immersed herself in church and community and in protecting the environment. She's had national awards for environmental work. She's been out, and she does it socially. She's not a writer. She does it socially. She loves social interactions with as many people as possible. Some of you may be like that. Some of you who want to connect in a different way, some of you have deep sense of empathy, may find, well, that's overwhelming. I can't take all that input from all those people. I need a few people. I'm more like that, maybe. Ginger's more like that, maybe. I go to conferences and I love how much people love me at the conferences, and I love them and I feel close, but I come home. That's the source. The source for me. And I turn to God. You don't have to do that. I turn to God. I figure that a few people that I trust and God, that is the ultimate source of love, you know, that, which I don't understand. It's certainly not a white man and a gray beard on a cloud or a white beard on a cloud. It perhaps it doesn't have personhood in an ordinary sense. I don't know. I think it's all beyond me. But I do know there's a source of love in this universe beyond me. It's something that's just created it that way, made it that way. And I don't much care whether it's God or evolution, as long as I have that connection. That's just me, just so you know where I'm coming from. But love, that's the key. This joyful engagement, this taking others seriously and lovingly and caringly and starting with a core. And then, if you're me, you build a lot of loving relationships around the world, or you build them at, your local ball team and with your friends, or you build it in the Rotary Club, or you build it at the volunteering somewhere. You build it with your relationships, if you're a plumber, with the people whose homes you're going to. I know a lot of so-called tradesmen who are very caring about their work and the people around them. They're genuinely loving. We had a man who was just in here to repair a washing machine. Came in twice. And we spent a little time talking, and my wife got to know him. You know, we live in a relatively small community, 20,000 in Ithaca, and then about 30,000, I guess, in the Cornell and Ithaca College numbers, something like that. But they're relatively small. And when he came for the last time, the man who was working on the washing machine brought me a homemade birdhouse that a friend of his made out of parts of barns. Very loving. So it's varying degrees and varying kinds. It's all kinds of engaging in a caring, happy, interested, treasuring way. I'm going to take a breath and go to Julie, who's in Massachusetts, and says she wants to talk about love. Julie, hi. Happy New Year.
Hello?
Hi, Julie.
Oh, you got me on the line.
I did.
Thank you.
I got you on the line.
Did you know that today is Love Your Dog Day?
No. Tell us about
I can
that
tell because actually every day is Love Your Dog Day.
Well, I think that's true. Is that what you mean? It definitely is every day in our lives. We have three dogs. My mother-in-law, Jean, Ginger's mom, brought her large, rough collie, who has a bark, you know, and who is a very loving but protective big dog. We have a Shetland sheepdog who is quiet, as they mostly are, and reserved and thoughtful and a loving companion. Aww. And now my wife has a Yorkie. She laughs that she never wanted to become an old lady carrying a little dog around. And she takes that Yorkie everywhere she can with her. That Yorkie is so attached to you. I'll tell you a quick story about dog love. When we got the Yorkie, I saw the pic. We were looking for dogs, and Ginger said, well, I promised this kennel I'd come, and I promised that kennel, and then I promised the third kennel I'd be there later or whatever. And I said, look at the picture of that Yorkie on that third kennel. You gotta go there. That is the most amazing face I've ever seen in my life. And so she went there and fell in love with the Yorkie. On the way home, was an hour, two, mile and a half drive. I had to hold the Yorkie because Ginger likes to drive. And I was really worried the Yorkie would bond with me. This was Ginger's dog. Uh-oh. I want Yorkie bonding with me. Later. So we get home, and I carry the Yorkie in. Ginger comes in. We're tired after driving. Ginger's very excited. I put the Yorkie on the floor. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I notice the Yorkie, within 10 minutes, is starting to make circles around Ginger's chair and Ginger. Occasionally glancing over at me like to tell me something. And so I started counting. And that Yorkie walked in a circle around Ginger. And I mean a circle, like, you know, 1 to 2 feet from the chair, around and around, 20 times. I mean, that dog was establishing who she loves. Aww. And it's been like that ever since. Does that sound real to you, Julie?
Well, Puzzle, listen to you. She can't hear too well anymore, but I think she hears you through the phone.
Uh-huh. She got a comment?
She's got her two paws on my lap, and she's nuzzling up to me, and I'm petting her.
What kind of dog is she, Julie?
She's a schnoodle. Part poodle, part schnauzer.
Yeah. You know, Julie, I have an unpublished novel that I've got another book that comes ahead of it, according to my agent. But I'm hoping to get to it. But the novel is about a young girl who befriends the first dog, at least in her region of Europe. About 15,000 BC is where I decided to send it, with when the glaciers are beginning to withdraw and things are beginning to change. And the dog transforms her and brings out the love in this teenage girl. And she's very brave in defending it. She becomes extremely brave in protecting the dog, and the dog protects her. And the dog has puppies, and the puppies have puppies, because it only takes a short time. The way the puppies come is from another dog, which is another part of the story. She meets a boy with a dog. And in this wonderful story, the entire extended clan, it's an extended family, which is what we had back in those days, about 30 people with a few people that aren't family members, is transformed by the love of the puppies and the dogs. They're taught trust. So I think dogs, I'm so glad you brought it up, Julie, I think dogs provide us a model of love. I think they've taught us unconditional love. I'm not sure, and trust. And forgiveness, my God, you hurt your dog, and the dog is always ready to forgive you, unless he gets so scared he stays away or she stays away from you. So I think that dogs are very important. And a lot of my clients and my friends and me were closest of all to a dog for a good part of our childhood. Did you have pets in your childhood?
I did, yes.
Well, talk to me some more, Julie. Did you want to say more? Tell the audience more?
Well, yes, I have some bit of writing I wanted to read. It's just a couple of paragraphs. It's hot off the press. It's from a book I'm writing. And it's...
Go ahead.
It's just a...
You may be the first now to read anything much on the air. Go ahead.
A part of the chapter is about, you know, my wish for the world. And one of the wishes is that we, as human beings, would stop labeling others, because to love another means you don't label. The labeling is a way to dismiss that other person as deficient. And so I wrote the following. On what basis do we declare another mentally unfit? On what basis do we decide a person has too many issues or too much baggage to be included? Or maybe we use words such as toxic, negative, or bad energy. These are, first of all, subjective opinion, and secondly, they are all euphemisms for mental illness. This is the driving belief behind any of these terms. You're calling another mentally ill. As soon as you start to form such an opinion of another person, stop. Stop immediately. No one person is mentally unfit. No one is mentally inferior or unworthy. Not one person. If I find myself calling another person these things, it only means I have failed to understand that person.
That is beautiful. I like it very, very much, Julie. I want to look at another side of it, though, because I think it's very important when we talk about love that we also talk about protecting ourselves in relationships. So while I don't want to call anybody mentally ill, I don't want to call anybody toxic, and I don't want to shame or humiliate anybody, I also believe that if we are going to be loving, we have to build the kind of relationships that promote love around us. Do you agree with that, Julie, or does that seem exclusionary?
I just try to stick with people that, you know, I have a good relationship with. If I feel that, you know, a person doesn't appreciate me in some fashion or doesn't... you know, sees me as disordered, I cannot stay in the relationship if the person just sees me as a mentally unfit.
See, I think that's so important,
being.
Julie. I think that, and by the way, let me give folks the number again, because I would love to get people talking about love. Julie's doing a really good job and is bringing love to the show. 888-874-4888. Get over your shyness on this interesting and wonderful topic, and you know, light up the board here, as if we were talking about some of those more dreadful things that we so much more easily get into. So 888-874-4888. Got it? 888-874-4888. There's a difference, folks, between a relationship and love. I mean, actually, you can love people with whom you have no relationship at all. Ginger told me she fell in love with me when she read one of my books, saw my picture on it. What a blessing that was. I fell in love with Ginger pretty much at first sight. Certainly didn't have a relationship with her, didn't know her well. There's something about love, it can come slow over time with getting to know a person deeply, or it can just whack you like, oh, that's the face I was supposed to always be looking for. It can come in so many different ways, and then the relationships can fail, or the relationships can get better beyond belief if they're handled with love and ethically and carefully. But you need to distinguish between your relationships that have failed, especially, and love. The first two young women I loved. I think I was 14 and then 19. And I got rejected. Maybe for good reason. I was pretty up-tensed, tight, angry young guy. But I had a lot of feeling, positive feeling, too. But I was too serious for my age, probably. And then I just gave up on love for a while. What a tragedy that was. That was a terrible, terrible thing to give up on love because I failed at the relationships when I was so young. And it took me a good long time to recover from all of that. The odd thing is, I still believed in love, but I couldn't live by it. Couldn't live by it until I met Ginger in my 40s. Don't do that to yourselves, folks. Be smarter than me. Separate in your mind the failed relationships from love and decide that you got to search better, you got to choose better, you got to love better, you got to maybe even protect yourself better, whatever it is. You know, each of us is such a different story. But don't give up on love. That leads to disaster. Whereas if you keep in mind to be loving, and that's true as a reformer. That's what I've had to do. I have my models are Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Mandela. They're people. They're some of the slave leaders in this country before and during the Civil War. People who maintained a lovely, loving, caring attitude while they risked their lives at the hands of people living out a criminal system. And they going in there and being hurt by it. Douglas, who escaped from it, built himself into such a marvelous man, fought slavery as an abolitionist his whole adult life and yet wanted to forgive the man who had enslaved him, knowing it was a evil institution that he got immersed in. So, love really transcends all of it. It really, really transcends all of it. Julie, thank you for calling in. Do you have another thought? And then I'm going to go to Jean.
No, not at this time. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in, Julie. Thank you for sharing. I really mean it. Jean in Chicago.
No, this is Julie from formerly
yeah.
from Massachusetts. I'll talk to you later.
We're going to say goodbye, and I'm going to go to Jean in Chicago.
Hello, Dr. Bregan. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, very well. How do I sound? I've got my fancy equipment going here.
You
Same
sound
old voice.
Very good.
How does it sound?
Very clear, very good.
Oh, great, great. So, hi. Happy New Year. Welcome to the second day of the new year, 2019.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year to you, and thank you again for being so loving yourself, because I have to tell you, ever since I found you, which was only a few months ago, I have felt you are a real treasure because of your lovingness, and I really, truly mean that.
Thank you so very, very much. Thank you so much. And is there more you wanted to share today?
Yeah, I did want to share some other things. And that is, I think a lot of people have difficulty. I've gone through this experience myself, have difficulty being able to love because maybe that person has been mistreated. And so they feel rotten about themselves. And maybe they haven't gotten the love that they need in order to be loving. And if we're mistreated or haven't gotten the love that we need, we tend to say rotten stuff about ourselves, and we tend not to take care of ourselves, I think. And only if we're lucky, like it sounds like from what you've said, that you've been really lucky to have found Ginger because she loved you so much that it kind of, it fed you a lot of love, which has been able to make you more loving. And I had a similar experience in my life where somebody loved me very much more than I ever was loved before, and it kind of made a whole huge difference for me. And some people, I have found another person, not exactly like you, but another person who I think is a very valuable person talking about how to take care of ourselves. It's funny because he talks about nutrition and a plant-based diet and things like that, and he talks about the frontal lobe. And he's talked about somebody that deals with, I guess it's called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it has to do with correcting thoughts that we have about ourselves. So if we're saying negative things about ourselves, to kind of reevaluate that. But to cut to the chase, as far as that person, I didn't realize it at first because I went into it through a nutrition interest, has kind of a relationship to a church, kind of religious. And so the basis of his and the other person who was the CBT person was about God loves us. Now, you know, that's kind of a hard thing to for a lot of people to get in touch with because we've gotten away from that. But if you can, whether it's if you're lucky enough to have a person that loves you in your life, or if you can somehow tap into the fact that we are special and we are here for a reason and we are loved and we're worthy of love, that makes a huge difference. So that's what I wanted to say.
Well, it's so, so, so true. And, you know, it's, you know, the expression of love can come from so many different places, and along the way, it can get turned or twisted, and it's our job in life to do what you're doing, which is to find that just a pure stream and understand it and grow with it, because all institutions have corruption in them because they all have people in them. I mean, it's as simple as that. You could have the most wonderful idea in the world about love, relationship, caring, empathy, cooperation, and build an organization and have it become predatory because human beings do that. So I think it's so important not to get disillusioned by our failings as human beings and especially our institutions. I think that the family, one of the reasons the family is such an important unit, because it's the family and the couple are the best hope for building loving relationships. Now, the family has such a difficult task when it's raising children that gets so messed up there because it's so hard to raise children under current circumstances without the way we were intended to raise children, which was largely outdoors with an extended family and lots of people helping, watching, playing, educating. I mean, now it's just such a fragmented experience of raising our children. But it is in the ultimately in the one-to-one and the one, two, and three, our small groups, where we can really nurture and take care of each other, in my opinion. And once you get larger, then you're going to be facing difficulties that may be insurmountable and maybe not. But then, of course, a lot of people get a great deal of help from institutions. Jean, thank you for calling in. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Jean. Pinar from Maryland. Are you there, Pinar?
Hey, Peter. Happy New Year.
Thank you for calling in. You've been on my mind every day.
Uh-oh.
How are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing better than ever now that you've called. Folks, this is Pinar Miskey. Pinar has been on the show. She's a psychiatrist in Baltimore. She teaches my course, which is it starting in January?
It is starting later this month.
Yeah, and if you go to my website and just look for my courses, I mentioned them up at the top on the left under the important stuff. Then I've got a banner further down. And Pinar Live teaches that course, which is really about all of psychiatry plus how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs. It's the intensive course. It's for the serious folks. You don't have to be a doctor or those, you know, a lot of people take it or healthcare providers, but you could be anybody with the intelligence to take a course. And Pinar does a lot of the hands-on teaching. You'd get to talk to her online. I had no idea you were calling today, Pinar. This is so great. Get to communicate with her. And then I'm going to have a series of times when I stop in online too, live, and talk with people in the course. So it's a very, very special thing. Pinar has sent me a couple of books to read on from an Eastern religious philosophy viewpoint. Pinar has been reading them, and I've been thinking, I want to send this or that to Pinar. And you know, I haven't done a thing. I don't even know if, did I even wish you a Happy New Year? I don't think so. Happy New Year. Thank you for calling.
Well, I'm glad you got the books okay, because I was like, what's going on? And then I saw the topic of the show, and I was like, I got to call in.
Oh, God bless you for calling in. I had a kind of a spun out December. You know, Mom is struggling with some stuff, and we had to kind of reorient what we were doing to help her as she's getting older. And just the usual stuff. She had a fall. She didn't break a bone, but it affected her cognitively. And so, you know, things just sort of, I don't know. We sort of hunkered down to take care of each other for a while. I'm back, and Mom is doing better, and we've gotten the help we need. And thank you for calling again. How are you doing?
I'm recovering from New Year's Eve. I think I seem to have gotten a little bit of laryngitis or something, so apologies if my voice comes and goes here and there. But I loved hearing the comments earlier in the show, and I think Lori, who was on just before me, kind of brought up a lot of the things that I was thinking about when I was calling in. I think a lot of people do struggle with that sense of purpose and meaning, and for some, love is the purpose and meaning in other human beings. But I think, you know, for those who struggle with finding a romantic relationship or even platonic relationships, I still think that there's a lot of purpose and meaning that could be had in existence in other ways. For myself personally, I find a lot of meaning through, I guess, like the arts, and a lot of the famous works of art, the books, the paintings, songs came from very painful experiences that people have endured. And it just shows how in the right mind state, you know, when you're doing what you should be doing in life, beauty can come from all sorts of unexpected places. And I just kind of wanted to throw that idea out there. And that's kind of, I guess through meeting you, I kind of started re-exploring my personal spirituality and things that my parents had taught me. I was never into organized religion. Actually, being from the Middle East, they kind of, you know, steered me a little bit away from organized religion. But I think through my personal experiences of, you know, meditation, reading works of art from the gentleman that wrote a lot of the poems that, you know, in the books, is Rumi, R-U-M-I, and he kind of preaches the religion of love, basically, like how you know, caring for other people. Actually, not even just Rumi. I mean, it's easy to say it's an Eastern spiritual belief, but there have been a lot of people in the West who espouse the belief. And I really thought that it would resonate with you because essentially it's the same thing that you're saying as well over and over again in different places. Basically, the idea that, you know, God is love and love is God, and how do I differentiate between myself and others? And these are really questions that you ask yourself on a day-to-day basis. But when you really start to kind of explore what he's saying, on the surface, it could sound, you know, quote unquote, crazy. But, you know, when you really kind of think about it, it's very true. It's what does differentiate me from you? And could I be you if I had different life experiences? And what had happened to Rumi at some point in time, his best friend got murdered because Rumi was in a place of high power, I believe, and I don't know all the details of this, but it sounded like his friend had gotten murdered, and for a while he was really distraught and despondent, looking for his friend everywhere, and eventually he kind of found peace, and he said, you know, I realized that I had my friend within me all along, and I don't know why I was looking for their body or like their physical person somewhere when they were always within me and myself. And it just gets to a point where I think when you're doing the right thing and you're doing when you find that place of self-love, I think is the most important thing, that people just kind of, their life just follows and things become a little bit more comfortable, and the person's outlook kind of gets cheery too. So I was hoping that the books would resonate with you, and I'm glad to hear that you got them as well. But just wanted to throw that out there. It's a couple different ideas, but I don't know if that leads to any conversation.
Well, they do resonate with me, and I've been reading them. And it's very interesting. I'm also reading a psychiatrist named Smiley Blanton, of all things, who was sort of Christian, but really not, but ended up writing books with Norman Vincent Peale. But that's not, I mean, they were sort of an odd couple, admittedly, between them. And Smiley Blanton comes from a Freudian background. He was analyzed by Freud. And he is very, very interesting. And the Freud he describes, typically, if my experience is so different from the one the academicians and the psychoanalysts describe, he describes a man who was very warm and caring in the therapy. And it was a training in analysis, so Freud was perhaps more informal with that, where he's training somebody. But at one point, he writes, this is Blanton, Smiley Blanton, he writes that in his notes, which his wife put together for him after he was gone, he writes, I said to Freud that I was learning a lot from, you know, about the unconscious and all the other things that we talk about, but what I think has helped me the most is how caring and respectful you've been of me. Mm-hmm. And then he says, Freud did not respond. now you're adding a very important aspect to what we're talking about. I think it's just incredibly important that we look at a very big, big picture. I've also been reading. Have you read? And this is new to me. You know, here I am. I'm in my umpteenth decade, and I've kind of happened upon some new things. People have been writing for some time that are actually giving me more new ideas and more quickly than I've had in a long time, you know, having, you know, done so much studying in the past. And it's about the whole idea of the empath. There's a literature on the empath and people who are empaths and what they struggle with and how deeply they love and how easily they're hurt and what we can do to help ourselves with that. Have you read any of that literature?
No, I haven't, but that sounds very intuitively easily understood.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I was going to send you, and I will, a couple of books. And what I would like to do is have a future show with you in which we talk about this whole idea that some people are so profoundly empathic that they can barely be around people.
That makes that a lot
in
of sense.
Crowds, yeah. they feel everybody's discomfort at parties. Mm-hmm. They feel their discomfort. And some people feel it physiologically, mm-hmm. Where when someone they're with feels a pain, they feel the same pain. I've had some experience. At first I thought, really? And then I realized, oh my God, with Ginger, yes. Oh dear God, yes. And some people feel it just emotionally. And I've written mostly about that through describing Ginger in The Art of Being Helpful. I describe how my book, The Heart of Being Helpful, how she saved a bird who was trapped and suffering and managed to stay with that bird. It was huge and could have hurt her and didn't hurt her. Instead of it was a giant black-back seagull. It was a huge bird. And instead of pecking at her body, it pecked at her sweater so it wouldn't hurt her. And how she had such pain that the bird was feeling with his leg trapped in a decking, and how she got the bird free and let it go, and she was exhausted. Well, it's a bit different from me. And that is on a level of empathy. I've seen her have it with animals, with people, with her mother. Her mother's here. So I think that would be wonderful to talk about. And it's very much about love. And the message buried in it is that that we love so deeply when we are genuinely empathic toward the other person, but we have to learn how to manage what I call in The Heart of Being Helpful, I call it induced suffering. We have to learn to manage the suffering that comes from loving and being close and our loved one is suffering. And as a therapist, we really have to learn that. Does that make sense?
Oh, I see people like that in the hospital all the time where they feel they're like the rock of the family because they're so empathic and loving and caring. Everybody goes to them. But when, you know, when they're overwhelmed, unfortunately, it's not always reciprocated because they're so much in the habit of helping others that they don't help themselves.
Yeah.
This is where the concept of self-love is kind of, I was trying to get at. Yeah. Like, you could be the most loving person in the world, but it could also be potentially a negative thing as well. If you feel like your only purpose is to love others but not care for yourself, it's a fine line because you can't care for other people if you don't care for yourself. And I basically give people permission to take care of themselves in order to take care of their loved ones. And that's a really important concept here,
yeah,
too.
So can you stay on till the end of the hour?
Yes, I can. Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I want to let the folks who have called in know I won't be taking other callers because we got to the end of the hour when you called in. I think my last caller was about 10 minutes ago, just about the time, around the time you called in. So you could relax, and I won't be taking more calls. I'm going to make a habit of letting the callers know when I remember to do it. But call in. Call in another time and call in earlier, and I'd just be glad to have you on the show. We're talking to Pinar Miskey. And again, if you go to my website, bregan.com, and look up at the top, I think on the left, toward the bottom, you'll see a mention of the shows in the events thing. And also, if you look at on the right side of the website up near the top, you'll see it mentioned that the new January course is starting soon. And then if you scroll down, you'll see the three courses, the big one that Pinar will be teaching live, and the one that I'll be joining in on live. And then there's a short consumer course the consumer course is on psychiatric drug withdrawal. And then there's another course for everybody there is on the heart of being helpful and helping each other, taking care of each other and what there is there to do. So 5 minutes left now. And what about self-love? That's a puzzlement. You know, I've gotten to like myself better as I've gotten older. But I don't think I ever looked in the mirror when I was, I don't know how old, and thought, geez, that's a sweet, good-looking, nice man. I've only in the last few months looked at me on some of my interviews as I'm getting older and thought, I really like him. Does that sound silly, Pinar?
A lot of people relate to that, you know, just like what the caller said earlier today. You know, if you grew up with negative experiences, nobody around you told you how nice you were or how smart you were or whatever. You just genuinely believe that. Just truly don't believe it because people have that social connectedness and that need to hear it verbally from people. And so, you know, it's kind of amazing, you know, the assumptions that run through people's minds. Oh, this person called into my radio show just because they felt to do it out of obligation, not because they genuinely care for me and love me as a human being and appreciate the work that I'm doing, you know? And until a person says, Peter, I really love you and appreciate our relationship and everything you've taught me, you're a really wise person and you do great work. You know, and even then some people might still kind of not really believe it and doubt themselves because of their past experiences. And it takes a lot of work to get people at a point where they truly care about themselves and feel like that they're worthwhile.
Yeah, a lot of times people do reform work out of anger and resentment and things like that. And I think a lot of what I did was a mix I didn't understand. Because when I first stepped in that state mental hospital when I was an 18-year-old volunteer, I saw the people in such desperate conditions. I said to myself, you know, my God, I could be in that state easily. You know, here I am, I'm a Harvard student, I'm getting supported, going to college and doing well, and I have enough turmoil inside to know that with a few poor breaks, I mean, really, what could have happened to me? So I had the empathy, but it was also a lot of anger at what was being done to people. And then I found out doing my reform work that if I didn't let go of the anger at the psychiatrists, at the hospitals, at the brain surgeons doing lobotomy, if I didn't let go of the anger, I couldn't really give as much as I wanted. I couldn't be in this as long as I've been. Some of your thoughts. We got about a minute left. Give us some wonderful thoughts for the new year. I'll put you on the spot. Maybe we can do a duet about it.
Like, do you want to talk resolutions or...
No, just a good thought. What's going to lift you up this coming? I put you on the spot. We know it's
no,
long.
No. I think I called because that's kind of my resolution. I want to be able to love myself, love others equally, and do my best to see the beauty in other people. I think that's pretty much what I mean. If life isn't about that, then what is life about? Is life without that worth living, right?
That's perfect. Pinar Miski, I love you. I'm so glad you're in my life. You have allowed me to teach a course I never thought I would teach. And to do it, put in all those that work and that time, and to work with the Pam Popper with me to create this legacy course. It's got, what, I don't know, 25 or 30 videos by me, and you'll be teaching many, many hours with people. And it's just a wonderful thing, and it's going to be really tuned up for the new year starting in January. Thank you for giving me that. I wouldn't have that without you, Pinar. There's nobody else in the world I know that could teach it. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that.
You do a great job, too, but you don't have the time, so it is what it is. Thank you. I appreciate our relationship as well. And I'm glad I called in. It's nice hearing your voice.
Okay, and we're going to do a show maybe in a few weeks. Well, I'll get you the books first on being an empath. That's going to be really interesting, folks. I love all of you. I really do love this show, having this show. Thank you all for being on. Thank you for those who have called. Keep on calling. Have just a loving new year.